It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Okay, well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. I'm very happy to have in the studio this morning David Cheesham. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you.
And I'm also welcoming Mark Kelsey. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning, Mike and David.
We're going to focus this session on maybe getting behind the meaning for a term that has been tossed about most recently in Davos, Switzerland, by the president, in reference to a question regarding his comments about an accusation about something he may or may not have done. And he used the term fake news. Well, let's go a little bit more deeply into what perhaps such a term means. We have broadcast on our station a show that deals with financial affairs by a gentleman named Steve Pomerantz. And this week, interestingly enough, he also addressed the issue of fake news. And I'm going to just describe it very briefly because I think it is a good takeoff point for our discussion today. What Steve did was talk about a couple of recent instances where the SEC, which looks over financial affairs, particularly when you're involving stocks and bonds and such, and found that there had been a couple of cases where individuals created news about companies, used false names, gave false reports about how well those companies were doing. And in some cases, it appeared that the companies themselves had hired individuals to create those reports. This falls pretty much, I think, in most people's minds into what would be called fake news. In this case, there was a body, the SEC, which monitors these kinds of activities and slapped a heavy fine on the companies. And perhaps there's additional litigation and fining and all the rest to come. But for many people, this would be a clear example of fake news. David, Mark?
Sure. Well, you know, in the old day, we used to call it propaganda. But I guess the term now would be fake news, news that was not intended to report a factual statement, but rather only to either muddy the waters so that nobody knows what anything is true or not, or to convince people that something is true and something is not true.
And that would be very often intentional, and right. We have examples of that perhaps right. From Nazi Germany and other times. Mark, sure. Any comment there?
Sure. Back to the stocks and financial reporting, which I am somewhat of a consumer of. I see these tout sheets regularly, and I guess after a while, if you're in tune with it, it's pretty easy to tell what's paid for and what's not. But at least with financial reporting, there is an obligation now to, and it's always in fine print, but if you go to the bottom, it says something like, this was, brought to you by XYZ company, blah, blah, blah. So as long as they disclose that it's paid for, then consumers can judge accordingly. But of course, in financial reporting, which as far as, folks who may buy and sell stocks, there's a lot of emotion there. So if you're thinking that you've, hitched your wagon to a hot stock and you read something that confirms that, it's very easy to just sort of accept it because you want to believe it. And that is the very essence of what we're seeing now.
Okay.
And there's a regulatory environment that's in the SEC, at least in the financial community, that does not exist in the FCC today, where of course, when showing my age, I grew up on when broadcast news was regulated to the point where you had a fair, what was the term they used, that if you
presented
a fair use, if somebody's point of view was presented, you had to give the chance to somebody else equal time.
In some circumstances,
went away of the deregulation, I think, that started in Carter's time. But
So let's take another stab at one of the words here, news. Let's start with news. My understanding of news, and throw in here as I go, news refers, is built upon some old terms. Etymologically speaking, news suggests something is new. And so one of the things that people look for is information they have not had before. And the news media, the media that has grown up over time, whether it's a newspaper or internet-based news programs or internet-based blogging or social media, has followed along in the modern world, I think, by saying we search for the new. We search for the new. What is, and it's an answer to the question, what is happening? What is happening? So yesterday's news is old. Today's news is important. Now, along with this is a kind of an interesting distinction between news reporting an event that has just happened or is about to happen and in process, and an academic study of something where people may spend years to investigate, look at, and write a book about, report about something that's happened. Now, in between these two, there sits a thing called investigative journalism, if you will. So if you have a reporter who is spending more than just today reporting about the most recent crash that's occurred on the Glenn Highway, then you're going to have someone who's going to spend more than a day, maybe weeks, maybe longer, to gather information, interview people, and then provide a piece that is in more detail. So given that situation, what appears to be at play right now is a change led by the President of the United States, who appears to be, on a day-to-day basis or an hourly basis, saying something new and using a method particularly available to many people. He is tweeting, sending out a short, brief, new message, which might reflect a new direction, a new thought, a new something. And that feeds perhaps the need that many people have for getting new information. So you watch for that. You get it. But then the additional piece is the statement that we've mentioned President made at Davos about a story, a bit of news that suggested something, and he referred to it as fake news. So what about that fake quality to news? How do you determine something and is fake? Steve Pomerantz, in his suggestions, said if it's financial information, check the source, see if it's a real person. Check and see if they've been reliable in the past. But in today's fast-paced world, how do you decide if something is fake or not?
Well, it's important, I think, to know your sources, you know, starting with a source that is known to be reputable and honest is always a good place to start. Beyond that, you know, I think the more you read, the easier it is to separate the wheat from the chaff, as it were, or the kernel from the chaff. I personally have not had a hard time picking them out. And it goes to sourcing. There are now out there online sources that fact check, that list all kinds of publications, print, online, TV, and rate them as far as which way they lean. Do they have, you know, a dangerous bias? Those kinds of things. There's information out there for people who care. what is, I think, the biggest concern is that there is a tendency, regardless of which side of the spectrum you come from politically, there is a tendency to, you know, stay in the echo chamber. And even in the face of evidence to the contrary, people are more willing now to sort of dismiss it. The Poynter Institute, which is, you know, kind of the scholarly conscience of journalism, has some excellent information on this. One of the studies indicated that the rise of ideologically driven news has accelerated the push toward fake news and the idea that something can be dismissed as fake news. And, you know, most frightening about that study was a sort of side note that said, even when these people see the evidence against their point of view, they're still inclined to not believe it because they don't, well, essentially because they don't want to. And that is not good. We need to do something about that.
Okay, David?
Yeah, sometimes we as human beings will double down if something we cherish beliefs comes up. We in some evidence disputing a cherished belief comes up. We want to at least temporarily cling even harder to our beliefs, and then perhaps if we are lucky, we find a way to reassess and kind of reintegrate the new information into our world and change and adapt to new information. But it's not easy emotionally to if someone has really triggered some emotions that you are clinging to, it's not easy to let those go if they become a part of your life. And if you're listening to something, you know, that's more propaganda than news. The other point I wanted to make, kind of changing directions just a little bit, is the president of the United States attacking the media and how easily that slips into attacking the idea of a free and open society. And we've had a report of death threats against a CNN reporter after some people attacked the authorities, attacked the news there, was it irresponsible for, and does it continue to be irresponsible for the president to attack the Fourth Estate, the part of our democratic institutions that informally gives us checks and balance? And that's a big question. And can democracy, I know this is big language, but can democracy survive an attack on free inquiry and open information?
So that leads to the question, knowing that in the past there have been leaders, presidents of the United States, who have disagreed with reports that have been coming from a variety of media outlets and have disagreed and said they have a different take on things. Are you suggesting that at the present time we have a change from a disagreement to what is a true attack by trying to undercut a vast swath of media that provides coverage and news to the population?
Well, sure.
Okay. Okay. So what we're looking at is a fundamental change. And in conversations I've had with others recently, they've pointed to places like Russia, where a number of journalists have died, not of what apparently are natural causes, and have looked south to Central and South America, to Mexico and other places where journalists have died. It's somewhat ironically
on the Philippines now,
right? Because they have been reporting perhaps reality rather than fake news. They have died not because they are fake news reporters and people have said, get away, fake news reporters, but you're reporting things we don't want reported. And I think that's the question and the direction of whether we're seeing a change led by a president at the highest levels who is undercutting media and even provoking in some ways a move toward a reaction and in some cases a very deadly reaction toward news providers.
And this is where we really need to be extra careful and draw a hard line. This, it just cannot go on. It will, well, it's all, I think it's already taken a toll. It's eroded what has been a solid foundation of good journalism underpinned by solid integrity and fact checking and all the things it should be. And not much has changed. Now, granted, in the 24-hour cable news cycle and the fast-paced news environment that we're currently in, there are way more people, you know, vying to get stories out. And that is not a good way to ensure there won't be errors. And so there have been errors, and there will be, just by very nature of the fact that it's being executed by humans, there will be errors. But an error here and there, promptly corrected, hardly means everything, you know, put out by that outlet is suddenly fake. And that's the idea that's being pushed. And smart people ought to be able to see through that.
So, Mark, you've brought up something which I wanted to go a bit further into, and that is the correction process. Interestingly enough, we recently had an earthquake, a very severe earthquake that occurred just off Alaska, and it led to warnings about the potential for tsunamis, and recently, what was discovered is that one of the buoys that reports information, data that's useful to understanding whether there's going to be a big tsunami or not, gave a false reading or was interpreted falsely. The report that I read looked at, well, why that happened and basically said, okay, this was fake news or news that was misunderstood. And we can understand how that happened. Now, this is a technical thing, but in the world of media reporting, you've had some experience with correcting things. What are the best ways to ensure that if a report comes through and it's, how do you avoid having it be erroneous?
Well, there's all kinds of ways to, you know, check and double check, and you've got an editing process that should also sniff out any errors. If you're careful, well, you can be as careful as you can be and still find a way to make an error, you know, even something as simple and sadly common as a misspelled name. Right. You know, that's something that you fix by just asking the person, how do you spell your name? And then, you know, transcribing it properly. But when it comes to facts about news, when a lot of what's being tossed around is hearsay or based on, you know, third-party reports, it gets way dicier. So it just requires more care and more interest in and commitment to the truth.
Okay.
Right.
David?
Well, yeah, so in this situation with the buoy, now, my understanding was that and you probably have more recent information than that. I thought the buoy reading was correct. It was 10 feet, but then the interpretation of what that meant was,
exactly,
was incorrect.
Exactly.
So you
clarifies, right.
So you have this, a scenario where, what was it, like midnight, and if this interpretation was correct, then Kodiak was going to be hit by 2 o'clock or something like that. I don't have the facts in front of me, but so that's a decision that you are a decision to make. Do you not report it? And of course, it's a little bit more complicated because it's not just news reporting; it's the authorities who are making the decision to blow the horns and say that this is an emergency. But the do you not report it if you're a journalist and risk not having the information there when people need to have it, or do you report the best information you have now, or do you hire a really good scientist who would immediately know that this was not a vertical moving earthquake but a horizontal, or was it the other way around? Anyway, see, that would not be the really good scientist that you would hire. But sure. You hire somebody who can interpret that more quickly. But the scenario, the common ground for all of these scenarios is that there is an honest attempt to get good information out there, and sometimes we fail. But propaganda is not an honest attempt. And you look at some of the, you look at Breitbart News and some of these others, they have a history, a verifiable history of putting out information, and they don't care if it's true or not. It's and this is in the long history. They've had Obama had ended up firing somebody from the agricultural department because of an intentionally falsely and poorly edited video. And this was not a eager news staff that made a mistake. This was an attempt to create a false impression. And there's a moral, very moral, ethical line, very clear ethical line between intentionally misleading people and lying and making a mistake when you do your job.
So let's bring this home to Alaska, or for that matter, to the Mat-Su Valley. Do either of you have, think about this a bit, any examples of fake news that was fake news that you identified as such? Because that may be the harder thing to do. You can toss off something that you don't like and say fake news, but did we go the next step and say, this is something that was truly fake news and was identified as such?
Well, I think I just gave an example of that.
Yeah, you did. No, that leaves Mark.
Well, yeah, but that's, in my mind, I hear you asking about willful, intentional misleading as opposed to something that a reporter didn't have
different
time
example,
to.
Right.
I have not seen anything, beyond like a personal blog or these, news blogs that pop up from time to time. I haven't seen anything that is, blatant and that looks like willful misleading.
So am I getting a picture here? Maybe this is the culmination of our discussion today, that while the term is tossed around and perhaps in some people's minds, there is this cloud of fake news surrounding us. The reality is, with the exception, as you've pointed to, of individuals who have unedited, provided something off the top of their head that they have not verified. But in terms of what we might be called a media outlet that has editing, et cetera, we don't really have identified a lot of fake news.
Well, see now, and I didn't come prepared with examples, but during the election, there were several. Facebook retweets.
Facebook was terrible.
Coming from Russia Times and wherever that were just, and they were reports about people who were making a lot of money, just making stuff up. And,
okay, so, and that's the point, though. I tried to phrase this. Is Facebook a fake news source, and how does it relate to the bigger sphere of media?
Well, that's certainly the conversation that's going on
right
In a broad sense, now, where do we draw the line? Where should there maybe be some regulation? Something's got to be done. I think everyone agrees that. I don't hear anyone advocating to keep this sort of journalistic Wild West atmosphere going on. But that is clearly where we're at now, and that needs to be ironed out before the next election for sure. I don't know that it will be completely, but we need to get serious about this.
Right. And I don't know how you do it without running into the First Amendment, but perhaps some real education about what propaganda is and what critical thinking is. But that's a long haul and it's hard work, and you can have people resisting any attempts to.
But what you can do at the local level, at the individual level, what I do is I call it out, and I see it on Facebook a lot, not so much anymore with the election behind us, but, you know, smart thinking people on both sides quick to post something that they want to cheer because they want to believe it, that, you know, is not on the up and up, and you can't be bashful about calling it out. And obviously there's a nice way to do it, but
right. People
need to point it out and say, no, this is not right. We're not going to do this. You can't give your tribe a pass and continue to call out the other tribe. It's got to be consistent. It's got to be smart.
Right.
So to sum up, my understanding is that there are some people who work for news organizations, and they may have a bias, and that bias might creep into their reporting. If the organization itself has a bias in some direction, then it's hard to do this vetting of information, and more importantly, separate out what we've been talking about, which is news, which is totally, we're told, different than opinion. And so it seems to me that keeping the barrier, keeping it clear that I'm saying the 18-wheeler turned over and it's at miles such and such on the Glen Highway is news. If I say the driver careened carelessly down the highway, well, that's lending something additional there. Am I
absolutely
in the right direction?
It's all about the verbiage.
And then it,
and what's verifiable.
And what you're suggesting is, what David, you both have pointed to, is that there are places to go that are able to vet something that you're thinking is important to know about from a variety of perspectives. So you're not just getting an echo chamber effect on it.
Right. Right. And that is not, and this is where I've differed from, I don't know how you feel about this, but I've differed from other professional journalists on this issue that I do believe there's a place for opinion journalism, for what the National Review, the way it used to be, not today, and or the Nation magazine or Mother Jones on the left, that have a point of view, but also have standards. So it's not that I'm not opposed to people having biases even, but I'm opposed to using those biases as an excuse to be sloppy or
okay.
Factual.
Well said.
Well, on that note, we'll end this edition of Valley Edition. I want to thank David Cheesham for coming in today. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
And thank Mark Kelsey for also coming in today.
A great conversation. Happy to be part of it.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.